Zero time elapsed 0 minutes 0.00. Repeat colon off button to activate press space bar alt followed by T. Play button to activate press space bar alt followed by P.
In the afternoons, my wife and I were doing some of that as well.
Yeah.
And, that's fine. I'm glad to be here, glad to serve, glad to help. I was with Lutheran Blind Mission from 1998 to 2012, started many outreach centers.
Right.
Also, the Christian Blind Institute. A lot of the outreach center directors said, we need more training on how to do this and how to be a leader. And in that, one of the things Lutherans love to do is educate, and it's very natural for me to do that. And so I started doing some reading, research, and put together about 11 different classes. I'm mentioning that only because the Lord's laid upon my heart in the last year or so to resurrect that and recreate it, but do it all audio. Half of the Christian Blind Institute was through seminar and on a week-long training in St. Louis.
Yeah.
And then some of it, and some of you were there.
Yeah. Yes.
And some of it was done through correspondence. This, though, will be all audio via probably the internet, although we'll make some other ways available. I'm still playing with the name, but I'm thinking right now it's going to be AICL, for short, Audio Institute of Christian Learning.
Oh,
Audio Institute of Christian Learning. And it'll have some of the same classes as the old institute did, but also some new ones, but it'll also be all audio, which means a lot of material will be different as well. Today's seminar that I'm running, you could call it Missionary Evangelist Witness. If you're a cat lover, you could call it Mew for...
That's right.
And it is the basis of one of the classes, or at least we'll probably build off of this then into the class. So if I'm saying things that you like and go, man, I got to get more of this class, it will be coming fairly soon, and just need your contact to make that possible. Right now I'm doing two podcasts, You're Not Alone. It's kind of a devotional thought. This morning it was mentioning about how all our life is one of witnessing, and Dr. Byron mentioned even his wife with ALS and still having faith and walking. One of the devotionals I had, I think it was last week, talked about when suffering, and how C.S. Lewis, who was a great philosopher Christian, his wife went through a lot of suffering, and he wrote to one gal who complained about her sufferings, and he said, don't think of it as though it's sent by God, but instead, see yourself as being sent by the general of the army, and you're in a fort, holding that position, take it one day at a time. And as we won the war, this was all during World War II, he was saying these things, many of these thoughts anyway, he was reflecting upon World War II and how the English, just little by little, gained the front line to win World War II along with the Americans. So he's using that kind of analogy. And so the devotion I had was built on that, as well as don't be surprised, there's Christians all over the world suffering. You're not alone. So today, though, by the way, if you want to sign up for either, the other podcast is a Bible study called Room 4216. Based off of Isaiah 42:16, where God says, I will lead the blind in ways they have not known. Really neat verse. And Cecilia and I do that together. If you're interested in either of those or the classes upcoming, all I need is your email address and contact info like that, and we'll get you going. Today, being that the theme of this conference is a Christian telling somebody about Jesus Christ, I thought it would be a good idea to talk about our being a witness, a missionary, or an evangelist. And the Bible does speak about all three. By the way, if you got any questions as we're going, you can stop me. I'm just going to just keep, don't raise your hand, of course, you know that. An interesting question is, what is the purpose of man? What is the purpose of man? Why are we here? Anybody?
To glorify God and serve Him forever.
Glorify God, what then?
And serve Him forever.
Okay. And serve Him forever. Ooh! Now, I looked up in John Calvin's his Heidelberg Catechism, and there it just says glorify God. What's interesting, Mary, is you picked up Martin Luther's concept. And Luther and Calvin weren't friends. Not at all. Luther emphasized more that of service. And that's the kind of Lutherans do. Love God, love your neighbor, serve God, serve your neighbor. You combine the two. I like that. Well, you know what? I'll say okay to both of those guys, but I think there's still something else. And Dave's purpose, and only me, is to be a witness to Jesus. I mean, why else are we left here in this miserable world where we suffer and struggle and where the devil tempts us and we stumble and fall and go, why, Lord, did I do it again? Oh, please forgive me and help me not to do it again. And you're scared that you might. Why did God leave us here? There's only one reason I can do it. Otherwise, you would have zapped us up to heaven right away. It's so that we can tell others who don't know Jesus about Him. So I like to think our purpose is that of making Jesus known. And that's really what a missionary does, an evangelist does, and a witness does. I remember one time at a wedding, I did the wedding and it was invited to the reception. I was sitting there and I thought, all these people, and they're laughing and joking and some doing too much of whatever. And I couldn't help but think, how many of these people do know Jesus? How can I share with them? Here they are. And I thought to myself, and I prayed, Lord, how many of these people do? How can I share with these people or other people to be a witness to them? Well, I mentioned three categories: missionary, evangelist, and witness. Bear with me for 1 second. I'd like to do a short definition of all three. And yes, there's crossover. And yes, if there's other academics in the room, you'll probably disagree with me just because you want to or because you think I'm wrong. Either are probably right. But just to start, I'd like to give some simple definition to these words, missionary, evangelist, witness, and then we can go from there. And as we go on this afternoon, you'll see there's overlap, but also there's a reason I'm doing all three of these for all of us. First, missionary. A missionary crosses over lines and barriers. Crosses barriers. Did you ever have when you were a kid growing up, I remember this, at church, missionary would come and talk about their times. What are the three obvious barriers that missionaries years ago used to cross?
Language,
yep. Oceans, and then customs. Language, oceans, and customs. And they'd always tell us about all the different customs and the weird things people would eat or wear, or how they put the chicken bones up in the trees and why, and how they use. And I still remember the chicken bones because many of the African tribes anyway, and also the Asian tribes of the Philippine Islands, and I remember Paul telling me about this, that that is trying to ward away the evil spirits. And then how a missionary could use these things as he watched and observed these things to then talk about Jesus. Evangelists. An evangelist. The word evangel literally means good news. And so an evangelist is someone who shares the good news. And a witness... Say again. A witness tells what they've seen. Tells what they've seen. Somebody this morning, I don't remember where, I'm pretty sure it was this morning, but I've been doing a lot of reading in the last 3 days to prep for today. Maybe it was in my reading. Acts 1:8. Can anyone tell me what Acts 1:8 says? Jesus was on the mountain. The disciples said, "Are you going to come and establish the kingdom now?" And he says, "No, this is not the time. But I will send to you the Holy Spirit, and you will
receive power."
Receive power, then what?
"After that, the Holy Ghost has come upon you, and you shall be my witnesses."
Witnesses, that's right. You shall be my witnesses. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. What? And we usually quote Matthew, at least I do, Matthew 28:20. "Go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing and teaching." But the Acts 1 is, "You will be my witnesses." And again, a witness is just somebody, well, like in a court of law. When you go up, you put your hand on the Bible, you swear you'll tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And that's all you do. You just say what you saw, like if it were in a car accident, what you saw from your corner, which probably will be different from the person at Kitty Corner across the street. And that's the whole point of a jury, is to figure out what really happened from all the different stories that are told. All we're to do is tell our story and what we've seen of God do. Okay. A missionary. A missionary is anyone who crosses barriers to share Christ. And we mentioned what some of those barriers are. Who is the best well-known missionary that we know of?
St. Paul.
Paul, yeah. Mm-hmm. And you think about his life, all the barriers he crossed. Mm-hmm. He traveled, he had to know not only Greek, Latin, but then he traveled to other spots where he probably knew a couple other languages. But then he'd also have to know their customs.
Mm-hmm.
Especially the Jewish customs were different from the Romans, who spoke Latin. The Romans, they believed in a multiplicity of gods. Kind of, there was Neptune, and Zeus is the Greek god that had one. I can't think of
Jupiter. Jupiter.
Jupiter is the Roman.
Jupiter,
version.
Thank you, yeah. Thank you. So they believed in that, and he was aware of all of this.
Right.
In order to be able to talk to them. In fact, what city was it when he went to and he was trying to figure out a way to speak to them?
Oh, in Athens on Mars Hill.
Yes, Athens, Mars Hill. Keep going. Tell me.
Well, he said, "I perceive that you are, depending on the translation, very religious or very superstitious. For as I passed along and observe the objects of your worship, I found also an altar with this inscription, 'To the unknown God.'
To the unknown God.
What therefore you worship in ignorance, this I make known to you."
Right. And so Paul, as a missionary, this is what missionaries always try to do. They try to understand the situation that people are familiar with.
Right.
And then work from that understanding, rather than from our understanding. And so missionaries usually were in a spot, at least depending on their language and ability, anywhere between a couple weeks to a couple years before they're really able to speak boldly about Jesus. Do you realize though also Jesus himself was a missionary? John chapter 4.
Oh,
the woman at the well.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
boy, did he cross barriers there. Yeah. He was talking, first there was a social barrier, just somebody he didn't know. And then there was the traditional barriers, men don't talk to women.
Right.
And that's still true in the Muslim
yes.
cultures.
Oh, yes.
If you've done any looking on how to witness to a Muslim, men have a hard time doing so to women. But women to women, that's where it can be done. Because their customs, their traditions say women should not talk to men. So Jesus was talking to a woman? Whoa.
And a Samaritan, no less.
Okay, now we move to the... Yeah, and that's another barrier, that of prejudices. That was a race.
What?
A race.
Was it a different color, or different dress, or different worship? Do we ever find out what was wrong with the Samaritans as far as the Jewish were concerned?
Samaritans were considered half-breeds, that they had abandoned the true worship because they intermarried with some of the other countries that had overrun them a couple hundred years earlier. And the Jews were very snobbery with the way they intermarry. We're pure!
Mm-hmm.
That was the reason. And so with that came then the watering down of the religion as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the Samaritan woman said. Well, we worship on this mountain, but right. You guys say it's okay to worship there.
Right.
And on it goes with the differences between them. Yeah. What are some of the prejudice we have today here in America?
Race is a biggie.
Race, yeah. What else?
Different religions.
Religions, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How about education?
Economic status.
Economic status, yes.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
Language, if you don't speak English very well.
Yeah.
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 And along with that, there's also social ones. Mm-hmm. Have any of you read the book Hillbillyology?
Yes.
He speaks about a lot of them. The Appalachian Mountains, people growing up. They grew up in a different way of life. Mm-hmm. I'll allude to that more in just a few moments.
Well, sir, I grew up in Appalachia. I still live on the Appalachia.
Do you?
Edge of the Appalachia Mountains.
Oh. What state?
I grew up in West Virginia.
Okay.
And now I live in Eastern Kentucky, about 30 minutes from the West Virginia border.
Okay. Well, have you read the book Hillbillyology?
No, sir, I have not.
I don't know if you do want to or not.
By
the way, it was written by our now Vice President Vance. And how he grew up.
But it is available in Braille on Bard. Rough language, but very interesting.
You mean curses?
In short, what he says is his family was and he calls them hillbillies, would call them rednecks, and how there's a way of life. They talk crude and they struggle with poverty, and they went from there. His family moved to Ohio for a short time because that's where the jobs were. But they go back every month because they're extremely loyal. So extremely loyal. My sister will come and kill you. And he talks about a family who did that.
That's right. That's
now,
right.
I don't really get into those kind of books.
Okay.
Yeah.
I had a meeting I had to go to in Honolulu back in 1980, and on the airplane they showed the coal miner's daughter, the guy beside of me was making fun of those stupid hillbillies, and the more he talked, the more I steamed. Finally I turned and I said, "Sir, where are you from?" He says, "California." I said, "That's why you'd believe anything that Hollywood would put out." And he turns to me and says, "Where are you from?" I said, "Charleston, West Virginia." The Appalachian Mountains.
Right, good for you, Mike.
You know, it's like a 5-hour plane trip, so it was a very quiet trip after that. I mean, you know, I hate it when people put other people down. Well, in America, missionaries no longer have to go overseas. They no longer have to deal with a language barrier. But there are other barriers that you do have to deal with, just even as we've described. And some people like it, some people don't. And that's the challenge of a, and we'll explain in a moment, that between difference between missionary and evangelist in general terms. And I truly think we're all called on it in different ways. Okay, for example, my wife is in the room, just so you're aware of this, so I'm not speaking out of turn. And if I do, I'm sure she'll let me know. Her family was in southern Minnesota, and was a very low economic level. I was more or less a middle class family in central Wisconsin. We met at college, and every time we've gone back to her place, I've always struggled being able to talk with her family because they're just not the same as me. And I'm just going to mention what I saw there among them. They like to drink a lot. They swear a lot. They live for the moment. God, well, yeah, if you got to deal with them, okay, whatever. Well, always when I'd go home, I'd always try to witness to them. And I'd try to cross the barriers. And I really struggled. A missionary does some extreme things. A missionary will, well, I'm going to come back to my story in a second. Three things: purpose, plan, and pray. A missionary will have understand his purpose, share Jesus, almost at any cost. Then plan, figure out how you're going to do it. And part of that planning is then figuring out who they are. And how can you strategically talk to them? And then pray. Pray for the chances of doing that. So this was quite a few years ago. Now I'm going back to my wife's family. We were driving up there, and I thought, okay. We're landing there at about 4 o'clock. I'm pretty sure Herman and Jeff will be in the backyard. This is the summer. Sitting at the picnic bench, drinking beer. We'll pull up in the backyard. I'm going to try this. And so I thought about it. And my purpose was to share with them. My plan was to try to relate to them and help them relate to me. And I was praying like crazy. So I got out of the van, and sure enough, I was right. Just like I expected, Herman and Jeff were sitting at the table drinking a beer. Herman has this interesting laugh. I knew it was Herman. So I just walked right over there, sat down, and I said, "You guys drink a beer, ain't you?" "Yeah." "They know I'm a preacher." And I said, "It's been a long drive. I'm thirsty. Can I have a beer?" And he said, "Sure." "This preacher's going to have a beer?" And all of a sudden, they saw me differently. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They saw me differently.
That's because the scriptures forbid drunkenness.
Well, Mike, I only had one beer. Now, they each probably had six, if not 12. But, go ahead. You were going to say something else, Mike?
I just said, but you didn't get drunk.
Right.
You were free to do that because the scriptures talk about drunkenness.
Drunkenness when the kingdom.
That's the prohibition is drunkenness.
Right.
But a lot of people, and this comes from the temperance era, you know, when they were busting up bars and all this in the turn of the century, the 20th century. Last of the 18th to the 20th century, Terry Nation and all those, that's where we get our forbidden to completely drink. Now, I don't drink, number one. I don't, you know, there is a danger of people who have a propensity of alcohol and we want to get them hooked on it where they wouldn't get drunk. And number two, I don't like this stuff. You know, I had my grandmother's cough syrup when I was a kid. And yes, it was moonshine.
Real moonshine, you know, wow.
Sorry, I probably talk too much.
That's okay. No,
it's funny, Mike.
You've crossed many cultural barriers. I appreciate your input. So it was my way of that day getting connected with them. And several times after that, I was able to talk with them. They were free up to talk to me because this guy had a beer in his hand. He's just like us. Well, they learned I'm not like them. I didn't have... You want another one? Nah, one's enough for me. I'm great. Oh, okay. But they still let me stay at that table and chit-chat. It was a turning point. That's what missionaries try to do. Yeah. They watch, observe. They won't cross the line, as you said, Mike, and get drunk. That would be crossing the line. But they will do things in order to connect them. I remember when I first started Lutheran Blind Mission, I talked to Otto and said, when you were over in Africa, how did you connect as a missionary? He said, well, I started with this tribe by just walking and mingling in them, and I realized they needed a well. And so through the language interpreter I had, and as I was learning, I said, let's start digging a well. And he was there digging with them. Mm-hmm. And because he was showing interest in them and their desperate need of water, they were open to say, why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? He had a goal, a plan in mind. Mm-hmm. Help them and really do it, showing physical input on his own and praying for that opportunity. Purpose, plan, prayer. And that way he was able to talk to them about Jesus.
Pastor Hendricks?
So, give me just one second here.
I believe there's scriptural precedent to what you're saying, because the Apostle Paul himself says, I've become all things to all people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And if you sign up for this class and take it, you'll get a lot more information. There are. I'm just doing a basic coverage of these, just to give an idea. So now let's move to evangelists. What's the best example we have as an evangelist?
Billy Graham.
No,
Bible.
Oh, the Bible.
Philip the evangelist. Acts 8. The Spirit of the Lord picked him up and took this guy from Philadelphia and San Diego with an unbelievable trip. And he said, thank you, Lord.
Right.
And then some other people did some things and helped him out. And he said, thank you, Lord. Waiting for the time that God would open the door for that perfect time to speak about God. And Enoch spoke to the gentleman who was in the wheelchair. Enoch. Now, I didn't plan this. I just heard this. But I know Enoch and I know his heart. That, you know, really the same thing is true about an evangelist as it is about a missionary. Purpose, plan, prayer. Enoch's purpose in life, an evangelist's purpose in life is? Come on, guys.
Tell people about Jesus.
Yeah, okay, there, good. Phew, you were listening. And number two, then, is Enoch had a plan. Any way possible, my life can share Jesus. And he knew God was afoot, because these things just don't happen one after another after another. And that's why he kept saying, thank you, Lord. Thank you, Lord.
Oh, yeah.
Knowing that the Lord had something in mind for him, and he was ready. Looking and ready, so that when the opportunity came, he could speak. And that's what he was praying for, an opportunity to speak. And when he saw the gentleman in the wheelchair, well, that was it. And so he shared. That's what an evangelist does. He's always looking for that opportunity. Now, Here's the next thing about an evangelist, especially in the modern day world. If I say to you, it's going to rain, 1 inch of rain at 4 o'clock today, is that good news or bad news?
Depends.
Depends.
You're in a drought.
That would be bad news if you don't exist,
right? Whether you're in a drought or whether...
Okay, I'm hearing it from quite a few people, yeah. Yeah.
Depends.
So, and yeah, if you're here in Philly and walking, and you wanted to walk somewhere, that'd probably be bad news.
Because you get wet.
You get wet, yeah. But if you're in a drought,
right.
That'd be good news. But if you're a farmer, and you just had 5 inches of rain the day before, that'd be bad news.
Yeah.
So, the point is the circumstance determines the situation.
All right.
Did I say that wrong? No, I didn't. When I ask, is it going to rain? The news, that's, I'm sorry, the news is, whether it's good or not, is based upon the circumstances.
Right.
There we go.
Right.
And so sometimes news is good, sometimes it's not. What we've noticed and studied in America in particular, now this is a generalization. I admit that. It's a generalization. Years ago, people used to understand fear and guilt quite well. They feared death because they were in the agricultural system. They saw death with animals all the time. They saw Uncle George get killed by the tractor. They saw Aunt Susie get run over by the bull. They saw death. It was close at hand. They also understood guilt. That when they did something, it had a cause and effect that you were responsible for what you did. Guess what? Americans don't fear much anymore. Yeah, I got cancer, but you know, there's a real good cure out, and I'm going to be taking this medicine, and I'll be back up on my feet in about a couple weeks. Guilt? Well, who says that's wrong? Hey, the roof didn't cave down on me just because I did that. That's your way of thinking, not mine.
Your truth, not my truth.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's the dilemma with America right now, is relativized truth. So it's a changing world. A changing world. Evangelism is aware of this. And so it still has in mind purpose, plan, and prayer. The purpose of an evangelist is?
To witness to Jesus.
Tell the good news.
Tell the good news.
The plan is you got to study and see, okay, if it's been raining for the last 6 weeks, tell him it's going to rain tomorrow. That's not good news. So, in the person's life, it is the same thing. What will be good news to that person? The guilt route, the fear route, those don't work so well. Psychologists, this is one of my professors, came across this, and he's since written a book about it, where the impacts of sin is what it's called. And there are seven general groupings of impacts of sin. Give me 1 second. I'm looking for my list on my victory. Okay. And they're sometimes called emotional responses as well as impacts of sin. The first one is weakness of self. And that can include a person's insecurity and indecision. You've met people like that, have you not? They just can't, I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And they can't make up their mind, and they're not confident in the decision, and they can be swayed easily. Oh, okay, if you think that's best, I'm just really not sure. And some people are just bowled over by that. That's one of the impacts of sin. Bear with me a second. I'm going to go through all of these and then I'll explain how they can be used in the gospel in sharing good news. Second one is meaninglessness. lack of purpose or direction in life. And we've seen a lot of people, and I know a lot of people who have either talked about suicide or have attempted it, because what's the use of this life? There's no meaning, there's no purpose, and why don't I just give up? Number three is alienation or loneliness or abandonment. You feel all alone. You feel abandoned. There's no connection with any person. The next one is bondage. It can be to any type of addiction, whether it be sex, drugs, gambling. You're not in control. Something else is in control. You're bound. The next one is evil outside. Floods. Droughts. War. Tornadoes. Whatever it be. It's just something super, something in nature or something bigger force takes over and crushes, and there's nothing you can do. A big fire like in California. The next one is fear, and that can be fear not just the loss of to death, but of a job, a spouse, a child, an honor, blindness, that means no sight. And then the last one is guilt, and that can be of shame, that they realize they aren't a good person and they're just ashamed and embarrassed of themselves. So again, it's WMABEFG. WMABEFG.
Oh, wow. Okay. So where's that radio station?
Weakness, meaninglessness, alienation, bondage, evil outside, fear, and guilt. If you see a person who is in bondage, what better thing can you hear but that Jesus frees us from the chains that really hold us in bondage? Because this bondage you have to drugs is just a small one compared to the bigger bondage that you have, because it all relates back to separation from God. And I like, and this psychologist that I referred to a paper that my Lutheran professor had, and it was this Lutheran professor related it to Christianity, and he said, rather than talk about it as sin at first with people, talk about it as separation from God. Because you don't know God, this is happening. Well, okay, I guess I don't know God. I am bound. Oh, I sure would like to be freed from this trap. I sure would like to not be left abandoned. Well, God hasn't abandoned you. He abandoned his son on the cross so he could reconnect with you. And so there's ways of using each one of these things as an evangelist, seeing the need the person has, and then relating the good news of Jesus with him.
So how would you do that to evil outside? How would you persuade them that God is still in control when these massive things are happening?
It really is miserable and tough when things like like a flood happens and kills people. Mm-hmm. And we sure don't have control over that. And you know, there's nothing we can do to stop it again. And it probably is going to happen again, but you know what? God is over this world, and he does control everything. And he has said to us that in the new world, he's going to be stopping these things. And wouldn't you like to be on the side of the God who's in charge of it all?
God.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, the class will work in detail with each one of these things. Now, the other thing, too, is not only does the Bible speak about forgiveness, life, and salvation in Jesus, but there are different, what we call, pictures or salvation motifs. You all are familiar with the forensic the judge that says you are innocent. Okay? That's the declaration. Lutherans love that one. God, where you were innocent. Well, then there's the sacrificial. All the Old Testament showed the sacrifice of an animal in place of, and that all pointed to Jesus, and how he would sacrifice himself for the sins. We don't understand that one very well, do we? I mean, have any of you sacrificed an animal in the backyard lately? No. We Americans just don't do that. And if you do it, it's a witchcraft. So. But actually, if you run into a witch who does offer sacrifices, there you got an in. Again, an evangelist, this is how evangelist connects. It's understanding the situation. And yeah, okay, you offer that cat, but you're going to have to offer another cat or dog, aren't you? But guess what? I have a sacrifice that covered once for all. And it was a perfect sacrifice. It was Jesus. That'll rock their boat. So there are different pictures. I would say the courtroom, sacrificial, the marketplace. Buying and selling. He's redeemed us. Redeeming is paid back, paid for. The ledger, like an accountant, the books are measured, and it was accounted to him as righteousness. God said, hey, that whole column is wiped away. There's a lot of verses that talk about that. There's the social network. That's like the family, a friend versus an enemy. Yeah, you feel like your family has ditched you and abandoned you and did you wrong and were mean to you. Well, God's not going to do that to you. He would be not only your friend, but invite you into his home forever. And yes, you might find some Christians who aren't all that good, but they're going to be better than what you just experienced with your earthly family. But it'll give you a bit of a glimpse of what it's going to be like in heaven, in God's family. So, and with all these, you've got to be a little careful, but it always comes back to what Jesus did for us on the cross, so that they can see, oh, Jesus did that. Okay, that's evangelist. Now we go to witness. What's the purpose of a witness?
To really tell it from the point of view, I know this because I saw it, because I've experienced it.
Yeah, I know it because I saw it. And so your purpose as a witness is... we all are witnesses. Now let me come at it this differently. We all are witnesses because we all have been forgiven and helped by Jesus. You might be a missionary, you might not. You might be an evangelist, you might not. Guess what? You all are witnesses. The Bible is clear on that. And so we have to be ready to say, always be ready to give a reason for the hope that you have. 1 Peter 3:15. Right in the center of the book of 1 Peter, it's talking about their hardship, their suffering. But all this points to Jesus, and he says, always be ready to give your reason for the hope that you have. Just state it. And it doesn't mean you got to convince them.
Yeah.
And that's what are, why? Okay. I'm sorry, I'm getting excited.
That's okay.
I can think of two reasons we don't like to witness. Can you guess what they are? Anybody? Why don't we like to witness to people?
Rejection.
Fear of rejection. That's one. Fear of rejection. Or? Don't know how to say it. Oh, and then there's three.
Inability to answer their argument.
Yes.
Ah, yeah. Or I was thinking, though, you're a freak. Fear of rejection because you're a weirdo.
A Jesus freak.
Well, when you look at a person, and this comes back to that story I told, I was sitting at that wedding and thinking, how can I be a witness to them? How can I share Jesus? Most of those people I've never seen again. What does it matter if they think I'm a freak? Half the world thinks I'm a freak anyway. What if they reject me? Half the world rejects me anyway. There's a bunch of people who don't think I'm a freak. Thank you. I hope you don't. There's a bunch of the world that doesn't reject me. Thank you. I hope you don't. See, as a Christian, we don't have to worry about those things if we really stop to think about it. But if we don't witness and we don't share, what's the potential that will happen?
No
one.
No one's going to plant the seed.
No one will plant the seed. That's right. And it doesn't mean we have to have the answers. I love the way you said that. We plant a seed. A witness, an evangelist is the one who helps, not persuade, but helps them understand. That's why Philip was called the evangelist. He said to the eunuch who's reading Psalm, was it 51 or 53? Do you understand what you're saying? You're reading. No. What's he talking about, this suffering servant? Well, let me tell you. Okay, that's an evangelist. We are witnesses. We don't have to have. Well, I have hope, even though I'm struggling. Why? I don't know. God's with me. What? You're crazy. Yeah, probably you. That's all you got to say.
There's another reason you don't witness sometimes. And it is we get too caught up in ourselves. And I think about the story I just told you, and I thought about this a lot. That was a very poor response, number one. And it was not Christian. And here I am going to a Christian meeting, and I'm not showing Christ. And live and learn.
And that's why I'd like to come back. What are the three things that a missionary and an evangelist are? Their purpose in life is share Jesus. Then they plan, always looking for an opportunity. And then third, they're praying. If we are always praying and thinking, this might be a chance that I get to share God, then we're not about ourselves as much as about them. Especially if we're praying about it. Then it's, Lord, is this the person I'm supposed to talk to? Is this the person? One more quick story, and then I have two more things, and then we'll wrap it up, unless you have questions. If you would shake my... Even if you shook my left hand, you probably wouldn't notice. But if I hold my two thumbs up side by side, my left thumb is 3/4 inch shorter than my right thumb. I love doing woodworking. And it happened to be that my left hand got run over by a radio arm saw. My plastic surgeon, he was so good. Ah, well, you're now just a card-carrying member of the Carpenters Guild. He thought nothing of it. He said, I work with carpenters all the time who cut fingers off. That doesn't stop them. I don't see any reason why you should stop, even though you're blind. He was neat. I liked him. All the time I was thinking, oh, Lord, I cut my thumb off. I'm going to the hospital. What am I going to do? Because I called Elmer, who lived a block away, and said, Elmer, I cut my thumb off. Can you help me? He was an old farmer. He had seen thumbs gone. Yeah, I'll be right there. Where'd you lose your thumb? Down there. All right, I got to put on ice. Let's go to the hospital. And he's talking to me all the way. Yeah, I remember Uncle Joe. He was it. And as I'm listening to Elmer, I'm thinking and praying, am I going to have a chance to talk to somebody, God? I still remember that. And first came this battle axe nurse. Oh, yeah. No opportunity there. Surgeon, nope. Had to do reconstructive surgery a week later because it didn't stick on. He tried to put it on, didn't work. And then I had to do a skin graft which meant I had it cast up to the elbow again for another 3 months. And going back to his office every other week for him to look and evaluate as it was being changed in the skin graft, clean and whatever. It was my last visit, 3 months after I had cut off my thumb. Diane was...